which we don't know, but if they are, it would be part of their deterrent strategy. Now, why is the United States and Israel even more so concerned about a deterrent? Who's concerned about a deterrent? Those who want to use force. Those who want to be free to use force are deeply concerned about a potential deterrent. So yes, Iran is the greatest threat to world peace, might deter our use of force.
Today is the 50th anniversary of Dr. King giving his Beyond Vietnam speech at Riverside Church, where he said the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence on earth. Your thoughts today as we wrap up, and if in the last 30 seconds.
Well, that speech by King was very important. Also, other speeches he gave at the same time, which have at the time seriously harmed his reputation among liberal Northerners. He sharply condemned the war in Vietnam, which was the worst crime since the Second World War. And the other thing he was doing was trying to create a poor people's movement, a non-racially separated poor people's movement.
And we're going to do part two of this discussion and post it at democracynow.org. Our guest, Noam Chomsky, I'll be with him at the First Parish Church in Cambridge on April 24th, and then to Denver this weekend, as well as British Columbia. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Check the transcript and podcast at democracynow.org.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their ECHO certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuffle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300. This KBOO program is also made possible in part by a foundation member and a grant from ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops through a monthly membership program. The ADX Makerspace, Learning Center, and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. Open every day at 417 Southeast 11th Street in Portland and adxportland.com.
Not your fault. Talking heads.
Burn it down the house. Good morning.
I thought it was just a long pause after that. Hey, this is
Are you waiting for the applause to roll in?
I am. This is my ultimate fantasy illusion craziness is that we have a vast audience and we can hear them. Neither of which is possibly true. KBOO 90.7 FM is what you're listening to. This is actually the best talk radio in this region. I want to say that because it's true.
Oh, that's a bold statement, sir.
Oh, it's a bold statement, but what the hell? It's also terrible outside of us. It's easy to make.
I predict a number of people will call and contradict you on that one.
I predict that the people who would call and contradict me aren't even listening to this station.
That's
Who knows?
Well, that's sort of a,
who knows?
That's a meta.
Meanwhile,
kind of
give money to KBOO, make us stronger, more powerful, and a real resistance to the fascists' onrush. I want to remind people that this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. He's the rational one. I'm Joe Uris, and I actually am reaching a point in my life where I think you can't be too crazy.
Okay.
So that's
important.
I'm the
important. Cute one. I'm not the rational one.
Yeah, he's
one.
The pretty one. 231-8187.
Right. Okay, now, here's a little glimpse behind the curtain at the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program.
A glimpse behind the curtain.
So when we talk
it's more
about...
like opening the bathroom door, I'm afraid. Go ahead.
All right, so, you know, Tuesday morning we do our show, right? So in the days following each show, we begin talking about what we want to do on our next show.
Right,
you know, and the process sort of comes together based on what's bouncing around in our empty heads and what's happening in the news, you know, and it's sort of this amalgam of a bunch of different things.
And it's becoming an obsession around the president and the fascists.
It is, yes. So thank you for saying that. Because we are going to, I think, starting perhaps as soon as next week, unless something really weird happens.
Oh, something really weird will happen.
We're going to devote some time to issues that don't have the word Trump in them.
Well, except that we really need to talk about the destruction of the environment, the intention of the Trump people to move all capital out of the hands of ordinary people in the guise of giving them jobs, and then just spend away on stuff that isn't needed, like more big hotel buildings.
Right, right. But not this week. This
not
week we're
going
to talk about Trump some more. All right. So here's what we had decided to talk about. We were going to look at Trump's big campaign promises, like, you know, repealing Obamacare.
Oh, we can
and
do it.
Building the wall. And we're still going to do some of that. But this morning,
we don't have a rational
the
list.
Past few minutes, we sort of swung around to something else. And that, I think, is about, and correct me if I'm wrong here,
Joe. You're not sure.
Well, you know, like I say, this is thing happening in the moment here.
I'm loosening it up. Go ahead.
What does the constant weakening of our constitutional norms and our democratic institutions, what does that mean to the overall health of the republic? Or put another way, does the Trump presidency, not just by itself, but as a continuation of conservative policy dating back to the Reagan years and even before, does it represent an existential threat to the republic?
Is that a question?
Yes. I think the answer is yes.
Well, of course it is. We both are on the same side.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
How do we fight?
But that's what our conversation was sort of shifting around.
No,
to.
It was. It was.
Yeah.
I'm being useless.
Yes, and that is admittedly a big picture sort of question.
Right.
But usually those make for some interesting shows. So
right.
I think we're going to sort of steer things in that direction today.
Right. I mean, in other words, what you're really asking is how serious, profoundly serious, is the Trump revolution?
Exactly. And I tend to see it as a little less of a revolution in and of itself as it is another point along this rightward spectrum that we see. Every time conservative presidents come into office, they do their damnedest to tear the place down. Have you noticed this?
Well,
all they
care
about is enriching their donor class, cutting spending on anything that'll help anybody who's not part of their donor class, especially the wrong people, if you know what I'm saying. And usually they do their damnedest to get us involved in a foreign war, which will, surprise, surprise, enrich their donor class.
Yeah.
The sum total of all these things, I submit to you, gentle listeners, has a corrosive effect on our constitutional republic. The more that we abandon traditional norms, the weaker the whole structure becomes. Here's a perfect example. The Republicans in the Senate stole President Obama's Supreme Court nominee.
Right.
They stole it.
Right.
They argued that, well, it was too late in the president's term. They're going to let the voters decide, and they're going to do this after the next president came to office. That is a complete usurpation and abandonment. But that's a contradiction, usurpation and abandonment.
Well, it'll do.
Yeah, it'll do. Of their constitutional duty and their constitutional prerogative. This has a corrosive effect on the constitutional republic as we understand it.
Well, I agree, except that I don't think most people in America give a rat's you know what around the question of the profound significance of the republic and the fairness of the system and the meaning of the first 10 amendments and so on.
Right. And why? because political affiliation has nothing to do with rationalism anymore. It's all about tribal identity.
I would agree with that.
I would. Yes, it's absolutely true. Why was that Supreme Court appointment denied to Obama? Because he plays for the wrong team. Because his appointment would mean that the balance of the court would shift to the nominally liberal side.
Which is actually conservative in the small c sense that a person who looks at things more profoundly
indeed
would understand.
Right. And American conservatives would lose that lever, which they have been wrecking the constitutional republic.
Yeah, and I wish we could abandon the term conservative entirely, or liberal for that matter. I think that the distinctions that need to be made have to do with whether or not we are a republic which represents the people, or whether or not we are, as I have said for many years, a totally elitist system that marginalizes most people and uses them as fodder and as worker slaves, really, mm-hmm. slaves to the dollar, and in essence does not create the city on the hill that was the kind of Protestant fantasy that created the federal system.
Right, and which was revived to great success by Ronald Reagan, who actually used that very term, the shining city on the hill.
Oh,
this mythical place that never really existed.
It's where the house of God is.
Is that right?
Yeah. God's right in there.
I must have missed that one.
And he had, there's no toilets because God doesn't need toilets.
We are digressing.
No, a little bit.
What do conservatives do in this country when they come into power? As I just explained, they do their best to wreck the place. And that means that their reigns are punctuated by Democrats in office who are marginally better, but not much better, and whose work usually seems to be committed to, at least in the first part of their reign, to undoing and the damage done and cleaning up the mess made by the previous conservative administration.
And now we have a really systematic and effective way by the fascists. I'm going to call them that from now
okay.
on. By the fascists. To block any reasonable approach to things like climate change, pardon me, to the issues of inequality, and so on.
Yes. So you have this cycle, lather, rinse, repeat. And with every one iteration
Wait,
of this,
lather, rinse, repeat?
Lather, rinse, repeat.
This is an ad for some kind of shaving thing, and we both have beards.
Well, I wish it was an ad because we'd be making more money than we're making.
We should make
no,
more money.
No, I don't
money.
Really wish
let's,
it's an let, ad.
Let's make more really money. That's a good thing.
All right. So every iteration of this cycle, we deconstruct more of the democratic norms that lend stability to our system, and we move farther and farther from the post-war consensus that led to the broadening and deepening of the middle class in this country.
Right, and remember, I'm speaking to the audience here, not you. Uh-huh. Remember that the war and post-war period were the time when working people had the best real incomes and the most real jobs.
Yes.
With futures that promised them that their children could do even better.
Right. And let's also be explicit that right now we're talking about white people, because that post-war consensus did not expand to include people of color. That didn't start until a couple more decades down the road.
Right.
And that has still not reached its fulfillment.
Well, far from it.
Far from it. So let's be very clear about that point as well. So we've gotten pretty far away from Trump's campaign promises here, haven't we?
Well, maybe we can put a challenge out to those of our people who are willing to call us and talk about things. I would love to hear from people and have them remember, it's only a few months ago, but have them remember a typical campaign promise and whether or not it's been in any way fulfilled.
Okay.
So let's do that. 231-8187.
Let's go to the phones. George, good morning.
Good morning. I just have a question for you guys. And
the answer is no.
Okay. Let me give the question.
Well, that wouldn't be fair. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No. I'm just fooling around.
Well, we're not yet running KBU like a Trump administration offshoot. So let me in here.
Of course, I'm sorry.
Sure, that's fine. I was listening to you, and I heard, I think, one of you was talking about sort of a little bit more of a slide of the entire system to the right.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And then one of you was sort of saying, well, you know, well, conservatives versus liberals. And I think I've been reading a bit recently over the years a few people who say, well, something we really should do more of in this country is less focus on individuals. And it's not that individuals aren't very, very important. They are. But we should look at the processes of life, especially our political, the dynamics of this steamrolling disaster called our political, and it's really part of our entire cultural, political, economic system. And I was wondering, do you guys think that looking more at the process, as well as the individuals, but more at the processes, can throw some valuable light on it? And would you care to give some illustrations of this? And I'm going to hang up and listen to you on the phone. I just love this show.
Well, hey, thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, first of all, my position is different from Abe's. Abe has hope.
I do.
And I don't. So, you know, just keeping that in mind, it doesn't mean I don't have hope in the larger sense, but I'm the guy who insists that Jesus never used a toilet. So, you know, you gotta understand my true cynicism in all of this. Anyway, first of all, my understanding of American history is that the elites, slaveholders and businessmen and merchants and petite farmers, created a more rational system of government for the whole 13 colonies, that the people who created that wrote what are called the Federalist Papers, which essentially explain their plan and justify it, and that to a great degree it was successful. During the process of it, whatever liberalism in our sense today of trying to, for example, do away with slavery, had to disappear to make the larger agricultural empire, the cotton empire, or the tobacco empire before that, survive and prosper. And that was a corrupt bargain, truly corrupt bargain, morally speaking, that led us inevitably to the horror of first the Civil War and then the repression of African Americans and others through a system which essentially has an exception to take away people's freedom if they commit any kind of crime. So we really have a system that is not democratic, is not fair, and is not giving fair opportunity, in addition to which something very serious has started to be apparent, which is the destruction of the notion of universal education and, incidentally, something we've never had, universal health care. So really, everybody is messed over in this system. There is also a series of myths promulgated by the school systems, public and private, that push the notion that this is the city on the hill, that this is the democracy that we all need, and that everything's fine, and they alternate the power between two parties that are sort of Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. I think, in fact, that has never been true, that the mythologies of the United States, like in many societies, simply are that, mythologies. And we are satisfied as a people as long as we get the fundamental needs of our personal lives met. Now, the problem of the current system is that it is not meeting those fundamental needs. People are not having wages that keep up with costs or that are better than they were 20, 30 years mm-hmm. ago. And at the same time, it's increasingly difficult to get a decent education without being encumbered with enormous debt. The whole system is perilously close to a crash point, even as some people, many people actually, who own lots of land, want more land and want to take away from the people the large, vast, and beautiful parts of the United States. Did I summarize that okay?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to go in the hall and slit my wrists.
Are you going to go home and slit your wrists?
Slit my wrists, yeah.
Well, first sell the blood.
Yeah. What kind of American are you?
Yeah, there's money to
make. Kill yourself before you make a buck? All right. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We'll also take your written comments at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, and also over the Twitter wire at HonestAbe72. I would really like to see more tweets. They're kind of fun.
Why do you like tweets?
I'd like tweets because it's almost like writing a haiku, right? You have 144 characters to work with.
Look who is the big tweeter.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, you like those haikus?
Well, that's a little bit
sad. That's sad.
Trump's tweets are kind of like the car wreck that you can't look away from. You know what
well,
I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of how they are. All right. At HonestAbe72 is the Twitter handle. Facebook.com/AbeAndJoe is the Facebook page. And, of course, by phone, you can reach us 503-231-8187. All right. So let's look at some of the big campaign promises.
Sure.
Okay.
See, you did the assignment.
I did.
You're so good.
I know.
That's why you got good grades and I didn't.
Repeal and replace Obamacare. No.
Well, no, but maybe. I mean, it's always possible they can change the rules to the extent that they can shove down all our throats or up all of our you-know-whats, a system that essentially deprives most people of affordable health care.
Right. Their initial attempt to repeal and replace it failed, but I don't think this is dead. It will rise zombie-like.
Well, and remember that this is also a lot about, not just about ideology, but in fact about the vast power of the insurance industry.
Well, of course that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also about punishing the poor. The people have the temerity to not be rich.
Right.
Right. Because spending money on them is a waste.
And who, more and more, given the mechanization and so on of production, probably aren't so necessary, except that people ideologically keep forgetting it's supply and demand requires people having money.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, it reminds me of a story from the New Testament.
Oh, I'm ready for that.
Yeah, it's a great one, actually. It's one of my favorite stories from the New Testament. When Jesus beheld a mass of people who were hungry,
yes,
and somebody suggested, hey, Jesus, why don't you, do a miracle with the loaves and the fishes?
Yeah.
And he said, well, no, that would remove any incentive for these people to help themselves. And they will just become dependent upon the state if I do that. And then he did not perform the miracle with the loaves and fishes, and he walked away. That's one of my favorite stories from the New Testament.
That's not in the New Testament.
Ah, sure it is.
Oh, where?
But Jesus is a Republican. Everybody knows that. And he would not stuff to people.
This is the New Testament according to cynicism.
Instead, he would say, pull yourselves up by your sandal straps and make something of yourself. I'm not going to give you any loaves and fishes. I'm not going to turn your water into wine.
And the reason why they couldn't do that is because they didn't know how to tie a knot?
I don't know. Repeal and replace Obamacare, that hasn't happened. The wall that Mexico will pay for. No, that hasn't happened.
Well, it's complicated because it turns out that the border is technically on the other side of the Rio Grande.
Oh, okay. So where does the wall go then?
Well, it goes on the other side. That is, the Mexicans get the Rio Grande.
Oh, so the wall goes on our side of the Rio Grande.
Yeah.
The Texas side.
In many places.
And then the Mexico gets the river.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's not so good.
Oh, I don't think that's how he sold the wall.
No, I don't think he said that. Nobody knows geography. Nobody knows how Texas became part of the United States.
Okay, now if you were Mexico and...
If
you were Mexico...
Holy smoke.
And if you were asked to build this wall...
Yes.
You would probably say, okay, I'll build it, but I get the river.
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't you say
that? No, it's not I get the river. I mean, it's just that's where the border is. Long since 1846.
So it's not going to build a wall like down the middle of the river.
Well, I suppose they could. I mean, engineering being what it is. No. In fact, Vicente Fox, who was a pretty powerful president of Mexico, two, three back, said, we are not building your F-word wall.
Yes, some salt,
and we're not paying for it.
Some salty tweeting in
English. Well, he's not first of all, he's not in office now. And second of all, he's really insulted.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Other people being insulted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No wall as of yet.
Well, and by the way, I saw a video of several young men climbing over the modern wall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not it's not going to solve the problem really. And second of all, in fact, the number of people from Mexico and Latin America in general coming into the United States is pretty low now because we're not in that great a shape.
No. In fact, in a few recent years, I'm not sure every recent year, there's been a net out-migration.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Of people to the south. Interestingly, though, there's no wall, but bids are due today.
Oh, is that today?
Today, yeah.
Oh,
on various.
I want to know how
various
much.
Corporations' proposals to build the wall.
Well, are they going to use only U.S. steel?
I have no idea.
Okay,
the wall's not going to be built, Joe. It's not going to happen.
I don't know. The Russians and the East Germans built a wall.
They did, but I was just across a town.
No. They marked the border with automatic machine guns.
Oh.
And a no man's land. I saw it.
Okay.
Well, it was a real thing.
Well, maybe that's our answer then.
Well, just put machine guns.
Yeah.
They're fired straight down.
Yeah, you don't
need
to build a wall. Just a machine gun and 100 yards of barbed wire and mines and pits.
And lots of work for guards.
That's all we need.
No, it sounds good.
All right. Next big promise, the Muslim ban. No, that didn't happen. He tried, but it didn't work. Because there's these other branches of government that can check the power of the executive. You heard about these?
No.
There's two of them. There's the judicial and the legislative.
Well, soon the judicial will be in the hands of the Republicans.
Yeah, soon they will. Yes.
Uh-huh.
So Trump tried to keep Muslims out. Not interestingly, Muslims that come from countries with which he does business, but Muslims from those other dumb, bad countries.
Well, I think that Saudi Arabia should become our partner in law.
Yeah, maybe so.
I mean, you know.
A province? A protectorate?
Yeah. Well, no. We would be the protectorate. Oh, we got callers.
We do. Let's go to the phones. Mike, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
Thanks for KBOO. Well, I hope this isn't just cynicism, but a campaign promise he definitely touted was he was going to lie his way through this whole thing. And he's definitely done that.
Wait a minute. He proclaimed that he would always lie?
Well, by his actions, I guess. He
proved
it over and over and over and over.
Well, he made it clear. He made it clear he would always lie.
Yeah, but demonstrated it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, he's lied 6 or 7 times during the campaign and a couple times after about creating jobs. Like, somehow he put pressure on these companies and negotiated companies to keep jobs here. It turns out that's all bull. He just stepped in like a puppet and took some credit. And I wonder how he's going to take credit for the Boeing airline shipments and sales to Iran, which, of course, is a direct relation from diplomatic workings with Iran over the last, 8 years.
Uh-huh.
And that's what creates trade. That's what creates jobs, not war.
Well, it's actually, in a profound sense, you're right. It's also the case that it seems like the shift of the focus of our new oncoming war has moved from Iran to North Korea.
Yeah,
because it's just words anyway. Yeah, it's just words. It's easy for them. I mean, Bush came in and ruined diplomacy with North Korea as well by saying, oh, axis of evil, blah, blah, blah. It's an enemy. And this negotiation with the border wall, I don't think it's going to be built either. That's just a negotiation, hard-nosed negotiation tactic. You ask for the moon and get rockets.
I also want to remark that it probably is the case that nothing will happen out of the Russian connection because they're totally muddying the waters. But the fact of the matter is that there is treason afoot by the Trump people, and that if any serious, fair-minded investigation of all of this would result probably in the disestablishment of this regime.
Yeah,
that would be great. Just to get those things connected, clearly international business is served its purpose, but it can also be corrupted, and definitely the case here.
Right.
There's also a ABC bit I saw this morning about very scary and crazy Eric Prince, Blackwater guy.
Yeah.
Whose sister is the head of the education department.
Yeah.
Boy, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to be too cynical. It's just,
no.
Day by day, and people need to stick together, and maybe we will find an FDR, but anyone that can speak as bluntly as FDR did about his buddies in the banking system,
right?
That's few and far between.
Well, FDR saved capitalism, really.
I agree.
But, okay.
I agree. In the grand scheme, that's what saved it. I mean,
yeah. No.
How long would it have been before we stormed the Bastille?
Right.
So, okay.
Hey, listen.
All
thank
right,
you for
thank
the
you.
Call, sir.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually want to tell a story. Can I tell a story?
Okay, tell a story. Okay, yeah.
I'm going to tell a little story.
You are the host of the show. You can.
Well, no, you are the host of the show, and I always ask you, and then we argue, yeah. But nobody knows.
No, you don't always ask me, but go right ahead. Please, please, tell your story.
Okay, here's a true story. My cousin married a very interesting guy who ran a plumbing supply operation in Brooklyn, and became, on his own, a master pilot. And got his Siemens captain's papers, and never did much with that. Very interesting guy, and they had three children, and one of the children became involved with essentially the what do you want to call it? The scheme of Amway, which is, I believe, basically the family of our new Secretary of Education and Prince, Eric Prince.
Right.
So he went with his son to some Amway rally thing, and it turned out to be both rallying salespeople and a Christian testimonial. You know, Jesus, come to Jesus thing.
Hmm.
And these people, I should tell you, are Jewish and kind of very sweet people. And the son, who is by now converted and into this, drags his father up to the front. And, you know, it was so nasty and tried to turn him into some other thing. And the father was humiliated, didn't know what to do, didn't want to hurt his son's career, didn't want to hurt the whole thing, wished he could be somewhere else. But this is typical, and I think it's important, of the psychodynamic of faith-based capitalism. And it's an important thing to think about, because there has been for a long, long time, I mean, going back to the 17th century, I think, a linkage between success monetarily and God.
Oh, far, way farther back than that.
Well, but this is why I say...
King David? King Solomon?
No.
All right, keep going.
No.
Please.
This is why I say that Jesus never had to use a toilet.
We took time out of our show for that story?
Yeah, you did.
All right. Let's go back to the phone.
You're helpless in the face of this.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me get you off the speakerphone here.
Yeah. Speakerphone bad. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Good morning.
Nah, much better.
Yes, I know. I think that talking about Trump's promises and whether he made them come true yet or not is missing a much deeper point, which is that the current political thing that's going on, and a large part of why Trump won and Hillary didn't, is that right now it's not so much about his promises, it's about deeper stuff like globalism versus nationalism. Right now there's a wave of nationalism all over the place because globalism is failing. It's failing all these people who are, you know, getting put out of work, and, you know, the whole sad story about Appalachia and all this other stuff. And that's much more what's going on than any particular promise he made and kept or not.
Surveys. I think you're right. I think you're right.
I think you're right.
Surveys of Trump voters I've read in the last couple of weeks say that they don't give a rip about he didn't manage to repeal Obamacare. They're happy. And they're not happy because they were counting on those promises. They're happy because he's standing up to globalism, which they think has been destroying their lives, and which in a large part they're right.
Well, I think you're partially correct, but I also think it at root, fundamentally, you know, there's this line out of Bertolt Brecht, first feed the face, then talk of freedom. The fact of the matter, that's a paraphrasing. I really do believe that people, ordinary people, working class people, by the way, suddenly they're called a middle class. The working class people in America are not getting their fair share. And that's not a necessity for the survival of capitalism. It's convenient for capitalism. But again, I go to the concept, very fundamental concept in economics, supply and demand. There's plenty of supply, but more and more people cannot afford what they need. They cannot have their demand need fulfilled. And this is very, very serious. And this is why the healthcare thing is very serious. This is why probably where FDR was going, a social democracy with a very strong capitalist base, would have and should have and still could make a kind of reasonable accommodation to the needs of all, except that ain't going to happen. We see it. We see that the people who are currently in power are totally conspiracists and totally believe in a system that makes them rich and us poor.
Well, okay. I just want to say, to add on to that, that people don't just need money. They don't just need health care. They need jobs that are meaningful.
Yeah, oh, yes. Sure.
And, you know, tackling that problem, you're not going to solve that with something like a guaranteed national income or an improved minimum wage or better health care. People need to feel like they're part of stuff. We got a huge problem about that, first of all, just with the way the jobs are going, and then second, with automation.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I mean, once the self-driving trucks are here and, what is it, 5 million truck drivers are out of work? I mean...
Well, I don't know the numbers, but yeah, it is a real threat to the workforce.
It's a threat to the workforce. It's a threat to people's psychological health. It's something that needs to be faced, and, you know, right now neither party even talks about that.
Well, yeah, and
but they'd better...
Yeah, no, you're right. And in fact, every time I cross the railroad tracks of the Union Pacific and so on in southeast Portland, I see a sign that says that the train that'll be coming along doesn't have a driver, doesn't have an mm-hmm. engineer. And I'm thinking, God, that's really weird. There's no human mind behind this. I guess they have some kind of radar that tells them that somebody's standing in the track, but I don't even know that. There's no discussion of the safety of having driverless trains.
Well, they're probably safer. That's the problem. A driverless truck will do a better job than a human truck driver. That's part of the real problem of this.
Yeah, it's really the humans that need to be replaced.
Well, you know, you can be snarky about it, but, I mean, seriously...
He'll always be snarky about it.
Seriously, I mean, you know, right now, all of a sudden, they have fighter planes in the Navy that can land on a carrier by themselves, and they do a better job than the pilots do.
Well, it is certainly true that you can theoretically, and now we're thinking actually, design complex electronically keyed machines that can do a better job than a human, and as long as you feed them electricity, will continue to do the work without any real sign of tiredness as long as you replace parts regularly.
Yeah, but you're right about automation, Michael, and the threat to manufacturing jobs from automation, I would hazard a guess, is probably at least as much of a problem as offshoring of
I think it's probably potentially more of a problem because it's not solvable by some policy decision.
So I'm trying to think of like what to do about this. One thought I had was maybe we should have a law that says a farm can be no larger than X, and then you'd get all these like yeoman farmer things going on again like this country used to have. That might be a good idea, but I don't, you know, I'm an expert in.
I think you've hit on something that's really pretty important, actually. The downscaling of our means of agricultural production is long overdue, and I think would result in a healthier populace and a more robust republic.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Listen, Michael, thank you very much for the call. We're almost in complete agreement.
Well, I must have done something wrong.
Yeah, well, good work at doing something wrong, Michael.
You should call in sick today.
Bye.
All right, thanks for the call. I agree with virtually everything you said, which is a huge surprise, except I would disagree that globalization is broken. I think it's functioning exactly as designed.
Well, and I'm not going to argue with you on that. Let's get back to your things, and then we'll go to the phone.
All right, coming up today on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Aaron Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, talks about the relevance of civil disobedience and nonviolent resistance in today's movements.
Which, is sometime I really want to talk about nonviolence.
Okay.
Put some time into it.
At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D.M.A. Roberts welcomes Lauren Weedman, who's performing her world premiere play, Lauren Weedman Doesn't Live Here Anymore, at Portland Center Stage at the Armory. And at 11:30, Art Focus presents some of the creators of the British play, The Angry Brigade, which is in its U.S. premiere at Imago Theater, just across the street from KBOO Towers. That's all that and more coming up today on KBOO, your community-supported radio station.
All right, we're talking about the Trump promises and, you know... just the doggedly awful situation we're in.
Yes. And stepping back from a higher altitude view, we're talking about where does the aberration of the Trump administration fall onto the spectrum of past conservative administrations and the cumulative damage that they have done to our democratic institution.
Right. Well, and the dogged insistence of a large number of Americans in believing fantastic mythologies around Trump and people like him.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. LJ, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well.
For once, I agree with Michael as well.
Oh, my goodness.
I read a very interesting article in The Nation magazine, March the 13th, I do believe,
uh-huh.
And it's called Billionaires and Bombardiers.
Hmm. And what, okay. In summary, what does it say?
It says that there are two factions in the Trump administration. The billionaires, you know, the Betsy DeVos's, yada, 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 yada.
Remember, she's Prince's sister.
Right.
And they're all fundamentalist weird.
Who happens to be worth a mere $5.6 billion.
Yeah,
and,
really.
Okay. And the other faction, the alt-right, the Steve Bannons, the Steve Millers, and, of course, my favorite, Sebastian Gorka.
Hmm.
All right. Now, the way Bannon sees it, he says that our globalized capitalistic system is a threat to nationalism, and it's also...
Well, it is, actually.
And it's also a threat to our Judeo-Christian paradigm.
Well, you know, paradigms always, they always bite you in the butt.
Anyway, that's the way... That's the way Ben sees it. So anyway, I really do recommend reading this article. It's very, very enlightening.
Yeah, you know, I want to say something here. There are several print publications, popular ones and semi-popular ones, The Nation being an example of that. There are many that are doing a very good job of reporting, and literacy, old-fashioned literacy, and you can do this online, you don't have to have paper copies of these things, is incredibly valuable. And it's really unfortunate that we do not have a strong tradition of literacy among our working people. And I think that that's something that is a fault of our educational system and a fault of our TV culture.
Oh, come on, Joe. We're not supposed to be able to read because if you can read and if you can think in abstract thought, you're a very, very dangerous person to the system. All right, just two more quick things.
Real quick.
real quick. The role of the Federalist Society in the selection of our Supreme Court nominees,
mm-hmm.
Number one, and number two. It's my understanding that Paul Ryan worships at the feet of Ayn Rand.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, and if you can please give the listeners a thumbnail sketch about Ayn Rand and her philosophy about greed is good, etc. And I will certainly take all of my answers off the air. And again, thank you so much for the show. And Joe, keep on keeping on, my brother.
Well, thank you very much. Okay.
There's a quote about the work of Ayn Rand, and I'm going to try to recall it verbatim here. Forgive me if I don't do it, and I can't even tell you who said it, but it's pretty funny. It goes something like this. There are two works of literature that can change the life of a 14-year-old boy. One, The Lord of the Rings and Atlas Shrugs. Right? Those
okay.
are the two.
Well, I'm not going to argue.
Okay.
I guess so.
One of them...
what about the Boy Scout manual? Never mind. Go ahead.
One of them involves fantastical heroes and magical thinking, and the other one involves orcs.
That's bad.
I didn't do it. I didn't nail it, but it's something like that. So what Ayn Rand wrote, a number of novels that have been incredibly influential in certain conservative circles, most prominent among them is something called Atlas Shrugs, which tells the story of this hero named John Galt, who is sort of this captain of industry, this man's man, this alpha male, who is all of these things because he is what Ayn Rand calls a producer. Now, she distinguishes producers from everybody else, whom she calls collectivists, meaning the only real people, the only true men, the only people who really advance society, are the ownership class, because they're the ones with the vision and the capital and the means to make things happen. And it is only through their generosity that the mass of collectivists even gets to have a job and earn a living and feed their families. It is only by the goodwill and the good grace of the producer class that she identifies. It's sort of a capitalist teenage boy's fantasy.
Well, and we have a teenage boy as the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Yes, we do.
And he lifts weights.
Yes.
He has a buff body.
Yes.
And he has muscles on his brain.
This philosophy that Ayn Rand established through her works, not only her novels but her other writings, has come to be known as objectivism. And it says the way to a truly enlightened society is to enrich the rich and just let them do their thing, and everything will come into focus and harmony.
The very concept of it being objectivism is a falsehood right there.
It is, of course.
Obviously not objective.
Yeah, it's a fantasy world. It completely discounts real relations between real people, and it completely discounts how the economy actually works. And it gets back to that notion of supply and demand that you've hit on several times during this episode. The economy prospers when working people, whom Ayn Rand despises, have money in their pockets to spend. End of story. We have ample historical evidence of this fact, and virtually no evidence to support the tax cuts for the wealthy lifts everybody's boats philosophy that was Ayn Rand helped to bring into being and has been subsequently embraced by a whole host of conservative leaders in this country.
Well, in fact, there's a significant percentage of Americans who don't get enough to eat, let alone getting decent health care. I mean, things are very messed up if you take objective as opposed to objectivism, objective examination of what's happening in the United States.
Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah.
Who's next? Camillo, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to return to the initial thrust of the program where you asked about whether the Trump administration was corrosive of democracy and the republic. And I think that question posits that there's an alternative that might have been less corrosive. And if you're referring to Hillary Clinton's alternative, I would say that, yes, perhaps she might have been less corrosive, but I think we would not have seen what we are experiencing now, which is a huge outpouring of activism and engagement.
Well, that's an interesting irony, actually.
Yeah, and I think that in the long term, things would have been much worse with Clinton Republicans, as we learned in the 90s.
No, I totally disagree, and I do disagree also that it's an interesting irony. It's as if you're saying, you know, look at the bright side of all this suffering. Look how many people are activated and engaged. Meanwhile, the poorest and most vulnerable among us under Trump are going to suffer and die. And that's too high a price to pay for, you know, an uptick in activism and engagement. I just don't buy that. I think it would have been best avoided in the first place. That's what I think.
Well, both of you, I disagree with.
All right.
I really do believe, first of all, some facts on the ground. For reasons of the politics and power relations in the Democratic Party, they really were more interested in maintaining their hold on whatever it is they hold than they were in winning, although they didn't think that was so. And Hillary was the heir apparent, and they did everything they could to stop, for example, Sanders or anyone else from challenging that heir apparency. And the result of that was a sense of despair on the part of a lot of people who stayed home, people who had supported Obama in two elections, simply didn't show up at the polls in many places. And on top of that, there was a tendency to look, you know, for, I'm going to put aside the sexism, which is clearly there, but to put a situation together with a candidate who never has proven herself to be very popular or appealing to most voters, unfortunately. And I do think there's a lot of sexism and so on in that.
I'd like to
Camillo,
take down
please
the
finish.
Straw man that Abe posed in my discussion, and that is that what we're seeing, that the loss of life, the suffering that Trump is bringing, would have been worse than what we might have seen under Hillary Clinton.
I think that is true. Yes, okay. That there will be more suffering and death.
Well, and also we have to wait and watch this stupidity unfold. You know, we're just starting.
But now I think that the potential for positive outcome is actually much greater now with Trump than it would have been with Hillary.
Well, I understand your argument, and that has been a frequently made argument, heighten the contradictions to produce a social change. Remember that heightening the contradictions, Marxist term, produced Nazism, produced Mussolini's fascism. Things step out of the plan or control.
And it also produced its defeat. And that's what we're experiencing now, the resistance.
Okay, well, we are doomed to have to leave that to our audience. Thank you, though, for the call.
Yeah, thanks very much. Who's next? Do we have anybody who's next?
Hello,
good morning. Who are we talking to?
This is Francis.
Oh, Francis, how you doing?
Hi. I kind of agree it would have been covert rather than overt, the oppression that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had been going on prior to Trump, and the system's already in place, you know, and we have people like McConnell who obstructed justice for an entire year.
Yeah.
And Ryan and Pence.
You know, McConnell is really a turtle. He's a transmogrified turtle. You must remember that.
Well, he's a sinister turtle.
Yeah.
But I'm a racist, but, you know, that's another story. I mean, that's pervasive throughout. So, if Trump were to fulfill one of his promises and rebuild the infrastructure and all the bridges and highways and byways and airports.
And light rail and heavy rail.
Improved and repaired and replaced. There'd be jobs for a whole lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. Look, there are
all kinds of jobs, not just construction jobs, but administrative jobs and people keeping track of everything. There'd be a lot of jobs.
No, you're absolutely right.
It is. All requires people.
Well, and it also requires an ideology that acknowledges, again, the notion of demand and the notion of giving people a living wage, none of which is adopted in reality by the Republican Party, and certainly not anything that Trump would ever understand.
And something that I didn't want to speak on that, really. I was thinking of something else. You know, you were talking about books that children read and how that in formative years. I can remember when I was a young preteen over the summer reading All Quiet on the Western Front.
Wow, you read well.
Yes.
And I have never forgotten it. And I see how it's still very pertinent today. 50 years ago today, Dr. King made his speech about Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And he spoke about how the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence of any country in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I feel that, you know, we can substitute for Vietnam now, Syria and Libya and Yemen and many places. And who are the purveyors of violence there? It's quite a contradiction in what we profess that we are.
Right.
Yes.
And the Pope just came out and said that the people who are profiting from war don't want peace. And that's exactly true. And I truly believe that now a lot of violence and conflicts are perpetrated to perpetuate this economy of war.
Well, I think that's true.
And I appreciate Tulsi Gabbard's attempt in her legislative attempt. She's got a bill that, what's his name? Rand Paul actually co-sponsored with her, H.R. 608.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate at S-532 to stop the financing of terrorists through these covert regime change activities.
Hmm.
It's very interesting. But I think what amazes me is it all does seem to be about a profit. And these corporations who have been given people status that have no conscience other than short-term profit, that's what's running things right now, and it's almost mechanical. And there's a lot of these silly racist people like Ryan and McConnell perpetuating that. But I saw something not too long ago where stocks are traded by these machines that actually trade in milliseconds.
Right. Yeah.
And that is awesome. It's like somebody just has to put a little pebble in there somewhere and stop the whole thing and just say, hey, you guys, we can do, we can make money doing this. We can make money making babies happy instead of bombing them, you know? I mean, they could
imagine.
Yeah, you know, somebody just needs to stop the works for a second.
Agreed.
And hey, regroup. All right.
Francis, thank you, as always.
You take care.
I always appreciate your calls. Who's next?
Hello?
Steve, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I got two things. It's kind of like doublethink that's been going on. I hear you, people talking about a Judeo-Christian ethic and Judeo-Christian values. And if you really think about it, it's absurd. It's doublethink. Because the baseline for anybody who has Christian values is that Jesus was a good guy and that he said good things. And in Judaism, that's completely rejected. Jesus was a bad guy, and he said...
Whoa, stop, stop. You're being ahistorical and really not very profound, man. I mean, come on. What are you saying?
I'm saying that this is impossible. I mean, the baseline of anybody would say that they are Christian, and I'll even include Muslims in this because they hold that Jesus was a prophet. They would say Jesus was good, and he said good things. But in the Talmud, it says Jesus was put to death because he was a blasphemous sorcerer. He's completely rejected. Judaism, except for Satanism, outright Satanism.
I am not going to entertain this stupid line of thought. Period. I won't do it.
Okay. All right. Who's next? Theodore, what's on your mind?
Well, am I up?
You are.
Yeah. So, you know, you had callers. What you got is your callers and Joe. It's, you know, basically it's about, see, my family's from the West.
Mm-hmm.
And what this whole show is, and I think K-Boo, is a bunch of red doper diaper babies.
Red doper diaper babies.
Okay, let's hear it. Tell us.
Wait a minute, is the diaper full of dope?
Probably.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, this activism, how'd you like... what I would say about the activism is this is actually Jacobism, and you guys don't like the counter-revolution, and you know you're not going to get with the guillotine, you're not getting to the leadership.
So I'm glad you brought up the guillotine because it's the only humane way of killing people, and we don't do it.
Well, I don't know. I think a 30-06 is.
Well, it'll hurt, but once the head's gone, there's no mind.
Theodore, you're all over the map, man.
But ultimately, you've got people that think we'll do a bunch of violence to Trump supporters. And we're going to change their...
Wait, whoa!
What are you talking about? Who is saying advocating violence against Trump supporters?
Your left-wing activist...
Name one.
All of these people that you associate...
No, not all of these people. Name one.
All of these people!
What?
Theodore.
There is nobody on the left that I know of. Now, I'll put that caveat out there that I know of who is advocating violence against Trump supporters. Not one. And for you to lob that grenade into this conversation, is not only irresponsible, it's intellectually lazy. Theodore, I'll tell you what. You go home. And you do your homework, and you come back, and you tell us who is inciting violence against Trump supporters, and then we'll have this conversation. Until then, good day, sir.
Who's next? This is starting to be like regular talk radio.
I know. Good morning. Weird.
Okay.
Hi, is it me?
Yeah, yes. It's you. A voice of reason, I'm sure.
I'm somewhere in between. I feel like my family enlisted before 9/11, so... Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. I was so curious how people feel about our relationship to Japan. Now, I'm a Japan person, so I have several talking points. I'm sure I don't have enough time, but they have the same prosperity thing within Buddhism, just to be...
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point.
Same point, but Prime Minister Shinzo Abe actually did just give their pension funds to us as a loan, which is a very interesting story for people who may want to follow this, because there are one of our major trading partners in Oregon, by the way. Because they are in such dire straits with their great recession. They are having a horrible recession, and they're losing jobs in much the same way the United States is, and they have they're veering towards nationalism in some regards. Now, they have hate speech pages on NHK. You can Google this, NHK hate speech towards Koreans. I heard both Francis comment about jobs. I think it was 1.4 billion, but it may have been more than that, in pension funds was handed over to create 700,000 jobs in infrastructure. And it's a very interesting deal because Japan's in such dire straits. They need the United States to help them.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard of this. It's fascinating.
And what I'd really like to say to the last caller is, what I love about this station is I don't listen to you guys a lot. I'm actually a new listener because I changed the volume on my NPR, and I got you. And so I guess I wanted
I love
to say
it.
Was, you know, the solar thing is so huge, and there's a dude who calls in on Wednesdays and said, I've been working in this industry for 25 years, and if solar could be on Oregon's page, it's a big deal for Japan. They're our major trading partner, and they need energy because of Fukushima. I just feel like there's you know, I didn't vote for Donald Trump, but when I see some of the Tea Party people, I'm sorry, I'm changing topics, it's loosely collected because the Wall Street Journal...
I'm sorry, I have to cut you off because we're out of time, and I wish...
Have a great week.
Call us another time. I really want to explore this issue, our role with Japan and Japan's role in the world. And you're listening to KBOO.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.